Hello and welcome to another episode of Africa's Victors, where we unpack stories found within Africa's history. My name's Koride, and today we are travelling all the way to the Zulu Kingdom, which is modern day South Africa. Okay, let's go. King Cetreo was born in 1826 to the half-brother of Shaka Zulu. So we encountered Shaka Zulu when we told the story of Queen Nandi, who was his mother. So Shaka Zulu's half-brother was Mpande, and Mpande was the father of King Cetreo, who is the protagonist of the story today. So let me give you a quick backstory. Shaka Zulu was assassinated by his other half-brother, Dingaan. And when Mpande heard about this, he was like, that ain't gonna be me. So he fled, essentially. And so Cetreo grew up in Egakavini. Mpande eventually became the king of the Zulus after he defeated King Dingaan in 1840. And even before he was crowned king, Mpande decided to announce that Cetreo would be his heir. And apparently that was quite an unusual thing to do. And that was really the beginning of Cetreo's story, because this was kind of the gateway, the opening to everybody realizing that, okay, once Mpande's gone, we're going to have Cetreo. And he was quite a dynamic, likable, influential person, to the point that at some point he became more influential than his father, the king. And the Brits had to step in because Mpande couldn't control essentially his own kingdom, and asked the Brits to come and help him out to get things under control so he could still be in charge. So eventually Mpande and Cetreo were able to find a middle ground and make things work. So in my head, this is the beginning of how things went wrong. The thing is, yeah, when you ask for help from a source that isn't really in your favor, you open yourself up to then other situations arising. When I saw that he went to the Brits, I said, my G, why are you doing that? Why are you bringing them into the situation of your own accord? I suppose at the time he didn't realize that the British were not on his side. Not really. Of course, at the time they had, you know, cordial dealings. They got on. They were amicable, you know, it was friendly. But unfortunately, that was not going to last. I mean, that's why they say hindsight is 2020, because that's exactly what this is. Reading the story way before I see how it ends, I'm able to already be like, why did you do that? And I think it's important to note in this very moment that every decision that we make, or decisions in general, have bigger or larger ramifications than they seem to have. So at the time when Mpande asked for help from the Brits, I'm sure it was just one time, you know, it's not that big a deal. That's what he thought. And it's important, I suppose, even in our own lives to think the decisions that we make on a daily basis, or even just in life in general, are bigger than just the moment. I think we should always have in mind the bigger picture. What are the consequences of an action that we take? We shouldn't just see it as, oh, I'm just taking the easy way out, because everything has a ripple effect or a domino effect. And that's not for us to get to a point of decision paralysis or action paralysis, because that's not the alternative. Because choosing to do nothing in and of itself is a choice and is a decision. And that in itself has consequences as well. So it's just knowing that we think through, or we are thinking through, the choices that we are making in life. Mad. Okay, back to the story. Mpande eventually died in 1872, and Cetreo took over from then, but his official coronation was a year after, so that would be 1873. And from 1873 all the way to 1877, things were going swimmingly. They were fantastic. Well, as far as we know, anyway, the Zulu kingdom increased in strength and military power, and it was great. But in 1877, Sir Bartle Frere, the High Commissioner for South Africa and the commanding chief of the British forces, decided that he wasn't really a fan of the growth of the military might of the Zulu kingdom, even though British policy at the time was to avoid war with the Zulu kingdom. Frere decided that he didn't care for this policy and decided to begin plans to essentially start a war. He gave the Zulu kingdom an ultimatum he knew that they were not gonna take. I mean, he suggested, or not suggested, he said that they needed to disarm and Cetreo needed to step down as king in order to avoid war. That was not going to happen. And so, of course, King Cetreo rejected that ultimatum and war broke out between the two nations. The Battle of Isandlwana was in 1879, and the Brits came with their like 1,800 troops and their superior weapons. And despite the fact that the Zulu people didn't have the same advanced technology in terms of weapons, they had 20,000 Zulu warriors and they decisively won. This, of course, took the Brits by surprise. They had vastly underestimated the strength of the Zulu people. They just assumed that their technology would be enough, so they came with just a few people, you know, let's just get the job done, bish bash bash, din dan dan, you know, that was their plan. And that did not work. This goes back to the takeaway that we got from Yar Asantewaa's story and the golden stool situation. When you have something worth fighting for, it's a completely different situation. These people were willing to die for what they believed in. That was their advantage. Of course, in terms of numbers as well, they came ready. They came with everybody. We're all going to do this. And that's what won it for them. I think there's something to learn from the attitude the Brits brought to this fight. The fight was their idea. They're the one who didn't want to negotiate, or they were the ones that were bringing unreasonable demands. And so they thought that, you know, we are superior in terms of our technology and our weapons, so we don't really need to try that hard. And that simply was not the case. And it kind of reminds me of moments of where we kind of rely on our natural talent or our natural leg up or our natural advantage and think that's going to be enough to get me through. I'm still going to do well. I'm going to be fine. And we've seen that time and time again, it's not sufficient. It's not enough to just be naturally good at something or to have a natural advantage or to be better in terms of what it looks like on paper. You know, if you put it on paper, the Brits should have won without a doubt. It should have been a quick thing, in and out, let's go. But we need to account for passion and zeal and the concept of never giving up. Those are the things that set us apart from those who are naturally talented and think that they can just rest on those things to win. Whenever I read stories of entrepreneurs or people who have made it in this life, in terms of what we see as success, it seems that in many instances, the people who make it weren't naturally talented at the things that they made it in. You know, if we look at Lord Sugar or Richard Branson or many others, they were normal. If you read their stories in terms of how well they did at school or anything like that, there wasn't necessarily anything in in those things that set them apart. Of course, you have the Bill Gates of this world and the Steve Jobs of these world, certain people who are like just smart, that they were naturally talented and they worked hard. But in many cases, they weren't particularly smarter than anybody else, but it was their grit and their desire to keep going and their will and making sure they didn't rest on their own ability. That's what got them to where they are today, you know? And of course, going back to the story, we can see that is evident in the case of the Brits here, that their natural talent, quote unquote, natural talent, or their advantage wasn't sufficient. It wasn't enough to win them this war. And this wasn't a small defeat. This was a major thing because this was the first time that the British Army had ever experienced this level of defeat from an indigenous enemy. So, of course, this made the Brits stand up and see that they had to take this threat seriously. They were concerned before, but now that they had experienced this kind of defeat, they realized this was a real threat and they had to regroup and respond quickly. During this time, the Zulu people created their own political state called Ulundi. So the second battle was called the Battle of Ulundi. This time, the Zulu people weren't as fortunate as the first time because, of course, the British Army had learnt from the mistake they made the first time and came with all of their might and all of their strength and came with everything that they could to ensure that they would win this time, which is such a shame because Cetshwayo was ready to find a way of negotiating and coming to some kind of peaceful agreement. But unfortunately, that was not to be in this case. Cetshwayo was captured and exiled to Cape Town. Later, he was permitted to travel to London to meet Queen Victoria, where he petitioned, essentially, to be able to return back to South Africa and rule his people. They agreed to let him rule a portion of the Zulu kingdom. So one of the tactics of the British army during the time of colonization was to divide and conquer. So essentially what they did here was take the Zulu kingdom and apportion it. So break it all up. And then that way they were able to control it in an easier way, you know? And so in this case, they allowed him to rule a portion of it, but under the condition that he would not be able to form an army to defend this portion of the Zulu kingdom. He returned to the Zulu kingdom in 1883. As sad as this story is in terms of how it ended, I find it amazing that he was able to keep fighting in any way he possibly could. He didn't have to go to London and petition the Queen. He didn't have to do that. It was in the bid to continue the fight that made him think of what he could do to continue fighting for what he believed in. There are many rulers that were exiled and they just lived in exile. That wasn't going to be Cetshwayo. He wasn't going to allow life to happen to him without him fighting back. And I find that really inspiring. And though he didn't get back the entire Zulu kingdom, he got to return to South Africa and return to a portion of what was formerly his. And he wouldn't have even got that if he hadn't fought for it or decided to do something about the situation he was in. King Cetshwayo died on the 8th of February, 1884. The doctor who checked his body to determine the cause of death believed that he had been poisoned because allegedly he was in good health that morning and he was said to have gone on a walk and everything was fine. But we can't be too sure of the cause of death simply because the doctor was unable to perform a post-mortem because Citroen's relatives didn't want his body to be dissected in order for them to find out what really happened to him. And so that was the story of the last king of a free Zulu nation. I wonder how he thought he would have been remembered after his second defeat. I wonder if he wallowed in the feeling of the fact that history would remember him as the king that lost, essentially. I wonder how he'd feel if he knew today that, in fact, he's being celebrated as the king who fought back, who was able to resist colonial powers at least the first time and deliver a blow that the British army just were not used to receiving at the time. That he would be remembered as someone who was brave and who fought back and who was the last king of a free Zulu nation. I think history was favourable to him, but we know that today history favours the brave. And that's exactly what Cetrea was. So in spite of the sad ending and the unfortunate way he died, I think that this is an amazing story of life and how sometimes things don't really go the way you planned. But if you do what's right and if you do what you believe in and essentially just do the best you can, which is what he did, history will hopefully remember you in a favourable way. Well, amazing. I hope you enjoyed that story. Please do get in touch with us and let me know what you think, what your thoughts were with regards to this story or any of the stories that we have told over the last few episodes or this particular season of Africa's Victors. This is the 8th episode and it is 8 out of 10 episodes that we will do for this season. So after this one, we have 2 more episodes before we finish season 1. So please do get in touch with us. Tell us what you think so far so that when we're working on season 2, we know exactly what works and what doesn't work. The best way to reach us is via Instagram using the @thevimoye, that's V-E-M-O-Y-E, Foundation. And if you want to find more information about the Vimoye Foundation itself, please do check out our website, www.thevimoyefoundation.com. If you would like to partner with us, if you'd like to get involved with what we are doing, would like to support us, do check out our £1 pledge where we are asking people just to give £1 a month to the cause. We're always looking for those who are skilled as well. So if you have a skill that you want to pass on, also do get in touch with us. We definitely want to hear from you. I think that's it from me today. I hope you have an amazing week. And remember, Cetrea didn't give up even when he lost the war. I'll see you again soon. Bye.